Okay, welcome to the lecture on compact star physics. So the last time we discussed the argument of Landau, and we started to discuss the dimensionless Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation, where we showed that we can rewrite the differential equations all in dimensionless forms, indicated by prime quantities. And we also realized that we can get to the physical quantities by rescaling the results with the Landau mass and the Landau radius, or more specifically with an energy density scale. And I'm just going to repeat this here. So we had a dimensionless tough equation, which was basically dp prime over dr prime was minus, and then without a g, so we just had an m prime, epsilon prime r prime squared, and then the usual three factors, which were also all dimensionless, which I do not include here. Right, and then we found that basically we get x, m prime r epsilon. We get m prime r as solution of r prime. There must be a prime here, right? Yeah, and p prime of r prime. And correspondingly, also the epsilon prime of r prime as solutions, which are dimensionless. And then also, of course, the maximum mass prime is then m prime of r prime when r prime is said to be r. And then, of course, r prime is the radius of the star, right? But in what the physical quantities we get by rescaling with some scale to get a physical one. So all masses need to be, if we get a physical mass, then this is the numerical value. And this one is just the Planck mass cubed over some energy density scale to the power of a half. Right? Where this epsilon zero came from rescaling. So we said the pressure is epsilon naught times p prime, and epsilon is epsilon naught times epsilon prime. And that's a quantity we introduced to rescale, simply rescale the pressure and energy density of the equation of state with a common factor, which has the same dimension as the pressure or the energy density in natural units. And then we have this rescaling factor to get back to physical quantities. And the same then also for the radius. The radius then is then given by what has been computed times the Planck mass over the square root of epsilon naught. Yeah, this is what we derived the last time. Okay, and now for free gas. For a Fermi gas, we just saw in the lecture that the scale, we have to rescale everything, is basically the mass scale to the fourth power, and then basically one recovers the Landau mass and the Landau radius. So m is m prime times the Landau mass, the Planck mass cubed over m squared which is m prime times the lambda mass, and the radius is r prime, the Planck mass over m squared, and this is r prime times the Landau radius. Yeah. And m prime, r prime are numerical prefactors. So this was basically a summary of what we did the last time. Any questions to this one? Yeah. And now we want to discuss solutions for other equations of state, simple ones. We have now this powerful tool of rescaling. So we can estimate if we have a different equation of state, what will come out. So for free Fermi gas we had, we can also now calculate the compactness of the configurations. The compactness C is defined as gm over r, basically the ratio of the Schwarzschild radius over the radius. Yeah. And in our case, this is then m prime over r prime, dimensionless, it's a dimensionless number. Yeah, so we divide by these two. And in our case, one can compute those two factors. So do I have the numbers here? Yeah. So numerically, m prime is 0.384 in terms of the Landau mass. And r prime is 3.367, also in terms now of the Landau radius. Okay? So this is about 0.11 as a compactness. And you can convince yourself, of course, if I take this number times the Landau mass for the mass of the neutron, then I should get out a maximum mass of Oppenheimer-Volkoff, which was about 0.7 solar masses. And the same for the radius. If I plug in the numerical factor times the mass of the neutron, I get out this 9.5 kilometers. Yeah. Good. But now I can do it for any other fermion mass. I can immediately write down the numerical values. Right? So if I say now I have a compact star which doesn't consist of neutrons but consists of dark matter particles. And those dark matter particles, they have a mass not of 1 GeV, they have a mass of, say, 100 GeV. They are the supersymmetric particles, the neutralino is considered to be a dark matter candidate, and the mass of that particle is most likely around 100 GeV. So you can calculate immediately what is the mass of a compact star consisting of neutralinos. Is this clear? How to do this? Okay. Let's do it. Example. So m is equal to the mass of the neutron. Yeah, then we find the maximum mass is this m prime we just calculated times the Planck mass cubed over the mass of the neutron squared. And then one gets out 0.70 solar masses. Okay, you have to express somehow one GeV in terms of kilogram and then get a number for the mass of the sun, right? And then you get this out. And the radius is then r prime times the Planck mass over the neutron mass squared. And here we get out 9.5 kilometers about. Okay. So we can do now another example. The M is a fermion, and we say the fermion is not a neutralino. M Susi, neutralino. Neutralino is a fermion, so we can say, okay, the neutralino just has fermionic pressure, right? And then one gets out that the mass is, if we say, okay, we have to plug in a number. So let's say M Susi is equal, say, 100 GeV. Then we can immediately compute what's the maximum mass. This is M max. Then the maximum mass is about, it goes like 1 over the fermion mass squared. So 100 squared, this is 10 to the 4. So this is 0.7 times 10 to minus 4 solar masses is the maximum mass. And the corresponding radius is then about 9.5 times 10 to minus 4 kilometers. Right? Is this clear?
Yeah.
Yeah. No?
It's small, right?
It's very small, very unusual. So if you find really such a small thing with such a tiny mass, a huge mass. I mean, if you calculate the average density of that stuff, this is huge. So this is something like the surprise they had with white dwarfs. So white dwarfs, they measured the mass and the radius, and they figured out the average density is not like that of a sun or a star. It's 10 to 6 grams per cubic centimeters. So if they find an object where they see now the average density is not 10 to 14 grams per cubic centimeters as for a neutron star, but it's a factor 10 to 8 larger, 10 to 22 grams per cubic centimeters, then this would be that object. But it's extremely hard to find. How can you find an object which has a meter? It's a meter-sized object, but it has the mass of 10 to minus 3 solar masses. So it's about a Jupiter. It's the mass of Jupiter jammed into 1 meter ball. Ooh. We better miss that 1 meter ball. This. Okay, just as an exercise. We don't know if neutralinos really exist, but if they exist and are fermions and have basically negligible interactions, then they would form compact stars with those properties, hypothetically. Okay. Just as an exercise to see the power of this rescaling arguments. So okay, so now to something else. We're looking at now, let's take another equation of state. We take a relativistic equation of state. A simple one. So here we just say, okay, let's take a relativistic equation of state. So say the pressure is equal 1/3 times the energy density. And also for that case, one needs to solve the Toff equation numerically and gets us some factor. But here it turns out there is, if we rescale that, then there's no scale in the problem. There's one scale, but it turns out to be that the whole thing is unstable. Because here, we know that gamma is equal 1, and we know that this is unstable, right? Gamma must be larger than 4/3. So this doesn't work. So we do a trick. we look at the equation and add a constant, epsilon minus epsilon naught. Now, this is not a polytrope anymore, and surprisingly, this is stable. Turns out to be stable. It gives stable solutions. And now we can rescale it. And in fact, I have written down already the scale under consideration. We can rescale everything in terms of epsilon naught, right? So we can rewrite this now in dimensionless form. So in dimensionless form, this means p prime is 1/3 over epsilon prime minus 1. That's in fact what we are doing, right? So we are taking that dimensionless equation of state, plug it in into our dimensionless tough equation, and get out the numerical prefactors of that solution. Right? And why is one doing that? There is one example from QCD, from quantum chromodynamics, where this equation of state appears. Where one has an equation where the pressure is 1/3 times the energy density minus 4b, where b now is a vacuum term, a vacuum pressure or vacuum energy density. The surprising thing is that you can construct this by looking at the following, that you're saying I have a back. This is actually also called a back constant. The back constant. And it considers the following. So you have a back. And inside that back, you have quarks and gluons. Quarks and gluons. And those quarks and gluons, they are relativistic particles. Relativistic. So there the pressure is 1/3 times the energy density, the free part. It's relativistic. So in order to stabilize the whole object, you have an outside pressure from the vacuum. And that outside pressure is balancing the pressure from the quarks and gluons from the inside. So this one here is outside pressure. And that outside pressure, we say it's of the order of B. It's a constant. Basically, the constant outside pressure. And as nothing is outside, this is a vacuum pressure. And therefore, we can also call it a vacuum term. This is a model of particles. So the nucleon also one considers as that you have the nucleons consists of three quarks, and the quarks have very tiny masses, actually a few MeV, but the total mass of the nucleon is 1 GeV. So these relativistic particles are moving around and produce a lot of pressure. And they need to be confined. And that's exactly the problem of confinement, that we don't see any freely roaming quarks. So there's some mechanism which keeps the quarks together. And one way to model that was the MIT back model, which introduced this back pressure and saying there's a vacuum pressure that keeps that back at a constant radius. So there's a balance between the two pressures. And the underlying reason is that the vacuum of QCD is a non-trivial vacuum. So it's not really free of particles. There's always popping up something. And there's what is called a non-vanishing vacuum expectation value of a gluon condensate and a quark condensate, which makes this outside pressure. Okay. Anyway, so this is a model of QCD where this vacuum pressure appears, which basically means that I have a have a non-zero energy density at a vanishing pressure. That the pressure is zero, but the energy density is not zero. So let's consider this. So we have this one, and now we say that the full pressure is the one of the free particles, and there's the outside pressure plus B, and the energy density is the energy density of a free gas of particles minus the energy density. And this, one can show that this is due to thermodynamic consistency, that we simply have to change the sign in order that this works. Okay, we start with this one, then basically everything is defined. We can calculate the energy density, and then we get this one. Because for the free case, we just implement the one of a free Fermi gas in this expression. Right? Okay, and then one can combine those two equations, and one finds that the pressure is just 1/3 times the energy density minus 4 times the Bragg constant. And if you plot this, it looks like this. So there's the pressure, there's the energy density, and then the pressure is zero if the energy density is 4b. So it starts here. Here we have 4b. And below that, the pressure would be negative. This doesn't make really sense. So we start basically here, and then this goes up linear with a factor of 1/3. Yeah. Proportional to 1/3. And before that, we had a Fermi gas. For a Fermi gas, this looks totally different. This starts at zero. When the energy density is zero, also the pressure is zero. But this is distinctly different. So we really have, for zero pressure, a non-zero value for the energy density. This is expressed with that equation. So anyway, you can solve the Toff equation with that equation of state. And you find the following, that then the maximum mass must be m prime times the Planck mass cubed over epsilon naught to 1/2. And now the epsilon naught is the 4b. So this should be proportional to 1 over the square root of b. The maximum mass shall scale with 1 over the square root of the Bragg parameter. And the corresponding radius also has to scale like 1 over the square root of b, because it also scales like 1 over the square root of epsilon naught. So where do we have it? The rescaling here. They both rescale with the same factor. Good. And then one gets out some numbers, and people have been fitting that vacuum energy density to the masses of the nucleons and pions and kaons and other masses of hadrons, and they figured that most likely the value is 145 MeV. So I will give out the maximum mass in terms of this value, so one gets 2.00 solar masses times 145 MeV over squared over the square root of b, and the corresponding radius is 10.9 kilometers. 145 MeV squared over square root of b. The value of b is not really known. It's a very simple model. So you can adjust now for your favorite value. But the surprising thing is that the mass scale and the scale of the radius are at the same scale as we have for neutron stars. And that is what is called a quark star. So here we have done the rescaling analysis for a quark star. From that, you can infer also now the compactness, and the compactness turns out to be 0.27. So C is at maximum 2.7 for this maximum mass configuration. So quark stars are much more compact than Fermi stars. For Fermi stars, we had 0.11. Here we have 0.27. Yeah, you can compute and also do numerical prefactors if you want from those numbers, and yeah, and confirm that this is the right value for the compactness. Is there a reason that somehow this maximum mass and the radius are about the same as that for a neutron star? Why are they are not orders of magnitude different? You can immediately answer that from the scaling analysis. You can say, oh, this is a completely different model, has nothing to do with the free Fermi gas and stuff like that. It's a nucleon, here we have quarks. So the issue is that the scale we have at hand, 145 MeV, is not too far away from 1 GeV mass scale we have for the nucleon. And basically, it's the same underlying theory, it's all QCD. So the QCD scale enters here, and on the QCD scale, we get out at the order of a solar mass and at the order of 10 kilometers. So therefore, it should not be surprising that quark stars and neutron stars are about the same, say within a factor of 2 or 3, something like that. Of course, we have seen if we go to a completely different scale here, this is the electroweak scale, basically 100 GeV. This is the scale of electroweak interactions, electroweak particles, electroweak theory. There we get completely different scales. We get much smaller masses and much smaller radii. Right? On the other hand, if we go to the neutrino scale, this would be also different. Okay, any questions to this? Good. Then we can go to the next equation of state. We will discuss much more in detail the mass radius relation of those quark stars when we have a separate chapter on quark stars where we discuss those properties again. And this is just to see the rescaling arguments at work. So the next equation of state we're discussing is the limiting equation of state from causality. Okay. So causality, what does it mean? Causality means that the speed of sound which we call Vs, is smaller or equal to the velocity of light. This is causality, right? That there's no information can be propagated faster than the speed of light. So in matter, for an equation of state, one can compute this the velocity, the speed of sound, by taking the partial derivative of the pressure with respect to the energy density at constant entropy. At constant entropy S. Yeah, so you look at your hydrodynamic equations, you do a small perturbation of a wave propagating through the medium, you find a wave equation, and from that wave equation you can infer of the speed of sound, the speed of this propagating wave, and you find that it is related to this partial derivative. Okay, this is from hydrodynamics. So at constant entropy, in our case, we always consider temperature to be zero, so we are automatically at constant entropy, entropy zero in all cases. And we can compute now basically the partial derivative if we just have the number density as a full derivative, dp over d epsilon, the speed of sound. But we can also make it more easy. Seldovich simply argued that the limiting equation of state has a simple form. The pressure is just equal to the energy density. Yeah? If we take dp over d epsilon, then the speed of sound is 1. V squared is 1. So this is the limit from causality. We cannot have anything stiffer than that. Recall that before we argued that the ultra-relativistic limit is the absolute limit where the pressure is 1/3 times the energy density. But in fact, by looking at causality, the limiting equation of states is a little bit higher. So we really can ramp up the pressure by a factor of 3, and we are still having a causal equation of state. Okay, so we can plug in that equation of state. But of course, as it turns out, this is unstable. Yeah. We can do a trick. We can say, okay, let's determine everything in terms of a polytrope or number densities. So how do we get this limiting equation of state? We don't get it from a free Fermi gas, but we can get it from an interaction-dominated equation of state, from interactions. And it's actually straightforward to derive this limiting equation of state from interactions. We simply assume, the following, that the energy density is a constant times the number density squared. Yeah. And then we can compute the pressure. The pressure is equal d epsilon over dn. D epsilon, no, this is mu. Mu is d epsilon over dn, right? So this is 2 times c times the number density. Okay. And then from that, we can compute the pressure. The pressure is then minus the energy density plus mu times the number density, right, from the thermodynamic relations. And then we find this is minus c n squared plus 2 times c n squared. So this is equal c times n squared. That is equal to energy density. So we get exactly that equation of state if we have an equation of state which is dominated by interactions or a polytrope to the factor 2. This is, in fact, a polytrope where gamma is equal to 2, right? A polytrope where gamma is equal to 2. This is exactly what we have here. But now, as we started from this expression, we don't need to bother us about this integration constant we had before, which is implicitly said to be 0 here in that expression. Yeah. Good. Is this clear? Limiting equation of state? Good. So now we can compute the mass radius relation. So we say the following, that again we have to assume some non-zero pressure and energy density. So what Seldovich is saying, p epsilon starts at a non-zero value, pf epsilon f. So we say that for low densities, we take a different equation of state, which we can trust. And above a certain limit, we say we don't know what the equation of state is, and then we take the Seldovich equation of state. So those two values are what is called the fiducial values, fiducial and pressure and energy density from low density equation of state. Low density equation of state. Right? And then we can say that the total pressure is given by the energy density plus energy density minus the fiducial energy density. I should be more consistent in my notation. Plus the fiducial pressure. Right? And then we consider that equation of state. Basically, we see now that this looks like an energy density minus an epsilon naught, right? And the prefactor is not 1/3 as we had before for the MIT back model. It's now 1. This is where the speed of sound is 1. So in the MIT back model, we had 1/3 because we considered relativistic particles without interactions, where the speed of sound squared goes like 1/3 because P is equal to 1/3 times epsilon. And usually it is actually the case for the low density equation of state that the pressure is always much, much smaller than the energy density. Yeah. That we see from a free Fermi gas already, right? It's suppressed by the Fermi momenta over the mass of the particle, so the pressure is much smaller usually than the Fermi energy density. For neutron stars, for example, up to the saturation density, that is 2 orders of magnitude. So the pressure is 2 orders of magnitude smaller than the energy density. So this is a very good approximation. So we can simply restrain everything to the fiducial energy density. And then we know how the maximum mass scales. So the maximum mass scales, Mmax scales as this numerical factor, which we need to compute now for that type of equation of state. We can compute M prime and R prime. And then this goes like M prime times the energy density. Let's write it differently. It goes like M prime over the Planck mass cubed over that fiducial energy density squared, because we said epsilon zero is about this fiducial energy density. And that is equal 4.2 solar masses. If we take as fiducial energy density the energy density of nuclear matter. So epsilon nm is 140. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Must be the square root. Thanks. So this is the energy density of nuclear matter at saturation. So basically, we discussed this equation of state of nuclear matter. So N naught is the saturation scale, 0.15 Fermi to minus 3 of nuclear matter. So up to this energy density, we trust our equation of state. We have some measurements. We know the properties of nuclei. We even have some idea about neutron matter. We will come to this. So up to this density, we trust the equation of state. And from there on, we don't know what's going on. And if we do that, we get a maximum mass of 4.2 solar masses. So simply from causality, there's a limiting mass for neutron stars, which is at 4.2 solar masses. So we haven't done anything about a detailed modeling of the nuclear equation of state, of all the interactions. This is the limit just from causality, right? So the equation of state basically looks like this. If I plot the pressure versus the energy density, we have a low pressure, which basically can be ignored. And then at some fiducial energy density, and this is the pressure, very tiny, we start to have then an equation of state which goes proportional to energy density without a factor, right? So it very much looks like the MIT back model, but now the difference is that we have a different slope here, and that we have a low density equation of state. And we will see that this will have also differences in the mass radius relations, slight ones, because the pressure is still vanishing at zero energy density. All right, we have nearly zero pressure here, but we still have a tiny amount of pressure, and this changes actually the mass radius curve for low densities. A little bit different. So this is the limiting mass of neutron stars. There was a famous paper by Rhodes and Ruffini who explored this for the first time. So they used the Seldovich equation of state. So this limit above there goes back to Rhodes and Ruffini. Sometimes this is also called the Rhodes-Ruffini limit. Now you can be bold and say, okay, the fiducial energy density is not nuclear matter energy density, but maybe it's twice that value. Right? Then everything goes down by a factor of square root of 2, and then the maximum mass is more like 3 solar masses. And that's usually the number which is quoted from the Rhodes-Ruffini limit. But this implies that we really know the equation of state up to this value, and in fact, we don't know that up to this value. We know it up to this value. So to be conservative, 4.2 solar masses is the absolute upper limit for neutron stars due to causality. Good. Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah?
The speed of sound, is it just what you wrote there, or was it the absolute value of dp epsilon?
The absolute value? You can define it in that way without the absolute value. What is happening then, you will see that there will be certain regimes where you get a negative value for Vs squared. So the speed of sound gets imaginary. And if the speed of sound gets imaginary, you think, okay, I screwed something up in my calculation, but you didn't screw anything up in your calculation. That's a property of matter. That's a property of matter, which means that the system is unstable against oscillations, so it will break apart basically. Once you make a small perturbation, that perturbation will grow exponentially. It's not a sine cosine function anymore, it's an exponential function, right? Because it's imaginary. So in that case, no absolute sign, yeah. No absolute value. You can leave it like that. You can, if you do a stability analysis, it also means that if I look at the equation of state, so if I have an equation of state which somehow goes down like this, I can immediately say, okay, I have to stop here because the curvature is negative. This will be negative, so I will have an imaginary speed of sound. So this is unstable here. So let me quickly write down the value for the compactness one gets out for these calculations. This is S equal 1. So we get out a compactness of 0.35. So this is a pretty compact configuration. We can compare this to the limit. To the limit we have from Buchdahl. Right, the Buchdahl limit was 3 over 8. If you put the pressure equal the energy density from causality, right, this is what we computed, 3 over 8. So this is 0.375. So 0.35 is not too far away from really the Buchdahl limit for that value. The other Buchdahl limit was 4 over 9, right, which is 0.44. So which is still off from this limit. But we are close to this Buchdahl limit for causality when pressure is equal to energy density. Good. So this closes the lecture for today. So the next time we will discuss more generic equations of state with arbitrary values of the speed of sound. And then we go on and calculate in more detail a first model for an interacting equation of state and look at scaling and solutions for that equation of state. But this will be not next Tuesday. This will be then on next Thursday. There's no lecture next Tuesday. Okay. See you then.